Good evening, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives. It is Mark Maron. I am in for Mike Malloy. Joining me in the sidecar is my buddy Don from Levittown. How are you, Don?
I'm good, Maron. How are you doing today?
I'm good, buddy. Nice to see you. Thanks for hanging out with me. Sometimes I need somebody to talk at as opposed to just out into the ether, out into the great world where people are listening. Now, I don't want any of you people to get panicky. All right, Mike Malloy is not gone. Apparently, there's some concern, you know, when Air America based or any sort of liberal progressive host disappears for any amount of time, that they may not come back. Mike Malloy is on a legitimate vacation, and he's asked me to fill in along with Sam Cedar and someone else at the end of the week. I don't have all the information. You can call us over here at the show at 800-989-1480. There's a lot of stuff going on. I am happy to be back on the radio. I will be fielding questions about Air America Radio. It is time now that I am coming to you through the Nova M network that I will actually address questions about Air America and my experience there. So if you've got questions, I'll try to give you as much insight as possible. I know I don't want to player hate. I don't want you to think that I'm going to dump on anybody except for the people that dumped on me, and I'm not bitter. Do I sound not bitter? Because I'm not bitter. I've moved on. I'm perfectly content being in my garage up in the hills of the Barrio in Los Angeles, though I am in a studio right now. I'm at the Clear Channel Outlet, which I think is the great id mill. Here in Los Angeles, overlooking the NBC studios, coming to you via ISDN line through Phoenix and on out into the world at large. There's a lot of things to talk about that have been talked about all day long here on whatever progressive outlets you tend to listen to. We will talk about Petraeus a bit. We will talk about McCain a bit. I would like to talk about Obama a bit. There's quite a few things going on. But what I'm mostly concerned with right now, and my immediate problem that I have, is that in the snack room here at the id mill of Clear Channel, they have a refrigerated candy machine, and they put the red vines in there, and I got red vines, and they were hard, and I don't have any nicotine gum. So I'm in a little bit of trouble, but I think we'll get through it. Also, I'd like to talk about the spirit of people. If I could start with that, I don't know if I expect people to be asses. I don't know if I expect people to be rude, or maybe that I've become cynical about people's behavior. I think that Americans, and at least in my eyes, have become selfish, self-involved, mostly concerned about themselves, even when they pretend not to be. But I had a weird moment today that moved me to tears, and I think I may be embarrassed about it, because I don't know if it had to do with my expectations or just the fact that I'm so unaccustomed to people being decent in moments. And it's really a silly moment. And I guess I have to share it because it was an emotional moment for me. And it's got nothing to do with news. It's got nothing to do with anything. I'd gone to the Y today, and I haven't been in a few weeks. So, of course, I went there thinking that if I ran 4 miles, that I would lose probably 5 or 6 pounds. Now, that's got nothing to do with anything. It's just my insanity around exercise. But I hadn't been in a few weeks. I slogged through it. I made it through. And then I go to leave the Y, go into the parking lot, and I'd lost my parking ticket. And I could not find my parking ticket. And I didn't know where it was. And I was furious and sweaty and didn't know how much it was going to cost me to get out of the Y parking lot. So I went to the parking office where they managed the tickets. And there was a woman in there, and I walked in, sweaty, aggravated. And I said, I lost my ticket. And she looked at me with that look. You know when people have to protect a policy that you know they don't believe in? You've seen it a lot in the Republican administration right now. You see it a lot in politics, where you have somebody there that's belligerent, they're aggravated, they know what you're coming at them with. And she says, it's going to be $36. And I said, well, I was just at the Y. Look at me. Smell me. I'm sweating. $36. Please, it's supposed to be two. And she goes, this is a policy, and the Y knows about it, and I don't know what to tell you. It's going to be $36. So I'm like, all right. So I took out my credit card. I gave her the credit card. And under my breath, I said, God, I'm retarded. And she looks at me and goes, no, you're not. You're not retarded. This happens to a lot of people. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then she says, you know what? I'm going to let you off for the $2 just because this one time, and don't let it happen again. And I was so overwhelmed by the idea that someone would just be gracious and nice, that I think I squirted out a few tears. Is that ridiculous?
I'm squirting out tears right now. That's probably the most beautiful story I've heard all day.
But it can't be. I mean, there's so many bigger things going on, but I can only deal with my own life on some level.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got one where someone's a complete ass to me.
Yeah.
On the way to Quiznos.
Yeah.
On the way to your house.
Yeah. Just today?
Just today.
What happened?
I walk into Quiznos and there's a line, and there's a line because there's this awful woman, this awful middle-aged woman in red pants, like red faded pants, and a bad vertically striped T-shirt.
Yeah.
Just taking up all the time in the world trying to order a tuna sandwich with a specific amount of mayo and a specific amount of lettuce on top of
it. Very important.
Very important stuff for whatever health concern she had.
Right.
And, she's sitting there, she's taking forever, the line's going on. She's doing one of those awful things where she's turning toward the guy behind her and blaming it on the Armenian counterperson who...
So race comes into it.
It's a race completely comes into it. It's all just, it's not about her. It's not about her ignorance. It's not even about the time she is consuming in all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, she moves along to pay for it. And we're all just like looking at menus, occupying ourselves as we will. And she screams at the top of her lungs... This is the problem with Los Angeles. No one socializes and storms out.
Man, so did everybody clap a little bit? It's always great when there's dramatic entrance. I find when I walk people out of comedy clubs for being stupid, that they make a very exciting, dramatic exit, as if to say, I'm leaving, I'm done, this is the grand finale. So let's get into some politics. I was in Washington, D.C. A couple weeks ago doing a big separation of church and state benefit for Barry Lynn and Reverend Gaddy down there. It's a simulcasted on the First Freedom First. If you look that up on the internet, firstfreedomfirst.org, you will get a link to this amazing benefit that we did just to educate people about it. And I got to be honest with you, I had not been to Washington, D.C. in a long time. I don't think I'd been there as a conscious political person. I don't think I'd spent any real time, you know, looking around Washington, D.C. in any real way. And I got to be honest with you, I was moved, and I was so impressed with the magnitude of it, and I thought, wow, this really feels like a great idea here. It's too bad it's inhabited by morons and cults and cabals of people that want to destroy the democracy that could possibly be. And I'm walking down, it was like 5 or 6 in the morning, I couldn't sleep, and I walked down the Great Mall, and I walked to the Lincoln Monument, which is spectacular, and there was nobody there. It's just a beautiful, sunny day in Washington, D.C., and there in front of the Lincoln Monument, the only other person is a black man sweeping off the steps. And I had two feelings. I had two moments. I said, is slavery over? And also, is that ironic? And also, well, they really, you know, keep this place clean. But the primary thing that I found amazing about Washington, D.C. is it does have a sense of elevation. It is very hard to dismiss. It is very hard to just walk through those monuments and not feel anything and not feel connected to some idea that is bigger than all of us and that hopefully will survive. And today, watching General Petraeus and listening to what he has to say about the condition of Iraq, it becomes clear to me that when you have the general in charge saying, quote, we haven't turned any corners, we haven't seen any lights at the end of the tunnel, the champagne bottle has been pushed to the back of the refrigerator, and the progress, while real, is fragile and reversible, unquote, that you got to be really concerned. I mean, what is really going on here? What are they really trying to do? They are just trying to sustain this thing, at least until the end of this presidency, so George Bush can walk away without taking any action at all, without changing any policy whatsoever. And what concerns me about that is I start to think about the possibilities of the next presidency. I start to think about, you know, whether or not these candidates are being honest at all, almost any of them. And you know, I like Barack Obama a lot. I don't, you know, Hillary, I can take or leave Hillary. But the idea that they are going to take troops, you know, out of Iraq in a significant way becomes more and more unbelievable to me. As much as I want it to happen, it just seems that the way Hillary frames it, in one sense, is that there's going to be some sort of managerial force left there. There's going to be some sort of trouble-avoiding force there. And then you start to think about the size of the embassy they're building. It's the size of a city. And just to man that embassy and just to protect that embassy is going to require not so small an army. So I think they're all being a little bit disingenuous in how they're framing this thing. We'll get more into this in a second. It's Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480 is the number. We'll be back in a second. All right, folks, it's Maren in for Malloy. Hope you're tuning in. A little AC/DC for you. I got my buddy Don from Levittown on the other mic. We're talking about Petraeus. We're talking about Iraq. We're talking about the realities that despite what any candidate says, I believe that it would take someone with real nads to pull those troops out in this upcoming presidency, no matter who it is. Because the truth of the matter is, and this has always stuck in my craw, is that they are building an embassy the size of a city. They are building an embassy complex, the biggest embassy the U.S. has in the world. It's 21 buildings. It's 104 acres. It's going to require 5,500 employees proper. And that is, you know, FBI agents, civilian employees, military personnel. And that means that is going to require some security. And when these candidates who are running for president, the ones that say they will pull troops out, that they're going to have to really be taken to task to make this happen, because I think that they can spin it. I think they can spin a continuing occupation by saying that we'll only leave, you know, forces there to protect the embassy. Well, what would that look like to protect that embassy? It would probably require 20,000 people just to protect the embassy, let alone to create some sort of managerial presence in the continuing occupation. I'm just starting to believe that no matter who is president, they will not take the troops out of Iraq. There's always going to be 100,000 troops in Iraq, despite what anyone says. And that's one of my biggest problems in the campaign season, no matter who it is. No, whether it's Hillary or Obama, in terms of the Democrats, whatever promises they make, and Hillary's, I take issue with how stupid she thinks we are. With Obama, like anyone else, I don't know what he's really going to do. I've seen him a few times. I listened to both of them, and I find that whatever we're basing our judgments on, you know, outside of records, outside of Hillary's Senate record, outside of whatever Obama has in his past, usually, and I believe this to be true, most people, when it comes right down to it, vote their gut. They vote their gut in terms of who makes them feel better. And when promises are being made, I never believe any of them, because what it requires to actually follow through with legislation and the way the government works, who knows who's going to be able to facilitate anything. But my fear is, I almost think on some level that the Republicans don't even care if McCain wins. Whoever's going to be holding this bag for the next 4 years, this explosive bag, it's going to be a hell of a presidency. The economy's going down the crapper. The war is ongoing. And there's a lot of issues at stake that it's no matter who is in it, it's going to be very difficult to follow through with anything. And it's going to be all damage control. And the truth is that with the war, I don't know. I'd like to hear what you think. Yeah, as Democrats, as progressives, or as whoever is listening to this, the idea of pulling the troops out, the idea of pulling all of them out, which I would like to see, but what is supposed to happen after that? You know, what happens after that mess that we've created and these Republican, you know, the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, the neocon death cult, has pillaged everything out of that place? I mean, clearly what's happening is that they renewed the Blackwater contract, and clearly, given everything that's gone on there, they have made out like bandits. And they've, you know, crumbled the American economy. They're dumping billions of dollars in there on a monthly basis. They've gotten away with murder. They've robbed the U.S. Treasury. They've robbed that country of all its resources. So they don't care. They've washed their hands of it. So what does pulling out look like if it's going to happen all at once? I mean, if you've got thoughts on that, because I don't know. I would like to see all the troops pulled out, but I don't know what becomes the strategy then. 800-989-1480. And now there's this thing that was leaked, apparently, by the Guardian picked this up, that there was a framework agreement between the U.S. and Iraq governments that's dated March 7th, that's about a month ago, that they found. It was marked secret and sensitive, that basically says the U.S. can conduct military operations in Iraq and detain individuals when necessary for imperative reasons of security without a time limit. It doesn't seem like there was ever any sort of commitment to actually a real withdrawal, which became clear with Petraeus today, I think for everybody to see. Let me take a call here. Okay. Let's talk to Roger. I'm just warning the situation. Roger on Vashon Island in Washington. How are you, Roger?
Fine, thanks.
What's on your mind, bro?
Is this Mark?
It is Mark. I'm talking to Mark Maron.
Oh,
I'm all right,
right,
man. How you doing?
Am I in the air?
Yeah, you are. You're on the air.
Oh,
maybe I should say that when I answer.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, real quick, I just wanted to let you know I've listened to every Mornings Edition podcast from the beginning to the very, very bitter end, and I wanted to say that when Mornings Edition was canceled, we not only lost just you, we lost a family. The family made of you, Mark Riley, Kalo the Costco Ho, P.W. McDonald, and all the listeners. And one of the things, everybody talks about Mark Maron, he brings the funny, but there's one thing I want to say that you do that seems to be underrated for you is your interviewing skills. You have a way of interviewing people that is so heartfelt that I find to be really amazing.
Well, thank you so much, Roger. Now I got to go out and find some guests because I don't have any guests planned. But I really appreciate your call, and we're running out of time on this segment. And I'll talk a little bit about Morning Sedition. I mean, I miss all those guys. I'm flying blind right now. I don't even have a producer. Yeah, Brendan's over at Sirius, but I certainly appreciate that. We'll be back in a second. It's Mark Maron. Well, I'm sorry, Roger. Call back on the other side of the break. Mark Maron here with Don from Levittown, Mike Malloy Show. We'll be back in a second.
You can dress up like a sultan in your onion head hat. We are building a religion. We're making a brand. We're the only ones to turn to when your castles turn to sand. Take this ledge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
All right, it's Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy. I'm here with my buddy Don from Levittown. We're listening to a little Bob Dylan, who actually won a special Pulitzer yesterday. God, he deserves it, man. That guy is one of the few artists that I have encountered in my lifetime who has answered all the questions. If you want an answer to a question, if you want to decode the cryptic poems that Bob Dylan has left for us over, you know, this 30 or 40 year career, whatever it has been, all the answers are there. I would go with Gates of Eden and It's All Right, Ma. Most of the answers you need are in those two songs. There are other answers, but most of them are in those two songs. Mike Malloy will be back. Do not get paranoid. Not all liberal talk show hosts are being pushed out for peculiar reasons. The phone number here, 800-989-1480. We're talking about a pullout. We're talking about if the Americans were to leave Iraq. Obviously, it's not going to be abruptly, but my point is that it's not going to be at all, despite Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter who's going to be president. And if they say they will, they won't. That's what I believe. Primarily because we are building an embassy there. Not an embassy, a city that requires 5,500 people to operate within its gates, not outside of its gates. So a lot of those are going to be military personnel. A lot of them are going to be with the FBI. Some of them are going to be with contracting firms, I imagine. But just to defend that embassy, in and of itself, is going to require a few thousand, probably 20. And then I say when they start talking about a small force of people to protect the Iraqis, you're talking about another at least 80,000. So if that is enough for you to call a withdrawal, if they cut it in half, they take, it's 160 now, 160,000 men and women there in the armed forces. They cut that in half. Is that enough for you? And if not, then what is a pullout for reals? I mean, what is a pullout when you've got an embassy the size of a city sitting in that country? I mean, that's my question. We have an IM here. I'll take IMs from people who know my IM. From Lucky Mess says, it can't happen all at once, but there will be civil war and horrible atrocities, and then we will put in another strong man and set up the pins to roll again. But isn't that, didn't we try to do that originally? Didn't that already not work? Isn't there already a civil war going on that's going to go on whether we're there or not, which I guess is what you're saying. But the whole strong arm idea, the strongman idea, doesn't seem to really function in this scenario because of Iran, because of the civil war between the Shias, and because of the Sunni militias and the Sunni presence and whatever's left of al-Qaeda, which is being funded by some of our other friends, the Saudis, the Kuwaitis, And then you have the issue of radical Shia and the Shia that are operating in the government, Maliki and al-Sadr, and their problems. And then you have the issue of Iran. It's a very strange thing to me that, you know, when you look at what's happening there, despite whatever we may think, Iran might be our only friend in the sense of maintaining any sense of order whatsoever. Yet all we do now is talk about bombing them. How are we going to take out Iran? They can't. They can't. And it'll only destabilize everything. And this was an amazing thing about Obama today. Obama has got, despite whatever you think about him, or whatever you don't trust, or whatever your judgments are about him as a person, I got my own problems with him, just on a personality level. I tend to be shallow like that. I tend to assume they're all liars and see which one has integrity to his personality, her personality, his personality. I find that that Hillary's primary fault in my eyes is that she has this incredible ability to make a statement that actually erases itself by the time she gets to the end of it, which is a fascinating talent. Whereas Obama has something that could appear to be arrogance, but may be just a sort of Teflon disposition. He has a very well articulated, you know, outward gaze. You know, he looks to the beyond. You know, he actually personifies hope in a very well staged and well crafted gaze. But today, despite whatever you think about Obama, he said we should be, quote, we should be talking to them as well. And he's talking about Iran. This is not something you hear American politicians say in public that often. And I think that he's right. What do you guys think? Let's take some calls on some of that, the pullout. How about Mike? Mike is listening on KPHX in Casa Grande, Arizona. What's up, Mike? You're on the air with Mark Maron.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. What's on your mind about that?
Well, I just want to talk about the issue of when we pull our troops out of Iran, or Iraq, I should say, sorry.
Do you know something we don't know about Iran? Are they already in? Did you just get a news brief? Are you on the inside, Mike?
No, nothing like that. But essentially, it's regardless of who gets elected, there's going to be continuing trouble in Iraq for at least the next 60 years until we get a couple of generations gone.
I think that's true.
If we pull our troops out now, it's just going to basically speed up the process. If we hold our troops there longer, we're going to delay the process. It's going to basically have the effect that you've got four different factions, or actually more than four different factions. They're going to fight it out for 60 years, whether we're there or not.
60. It's interesting that you actually have a timeline on this. Thanks for your call, Mike. It's interesting that you have a timeline for tribal warfare that's been going on for much longer than 60 years already. But the idea that if we pull them out and let them scrap it out and let them see who gets to the top of that bat, obviously the big fear there is that Iran will take over the entire region, have its own oil resources and those of Iraq, and we're in a position where we're not even talking to them, let alone we want to bomb them. I mean, this administration, if there wasn't so much dissent, and I'm not even sure that that's what it has to do with, they would have bombed the hell out of Iran already, which would completely destabilize the region forever. You know, given that I just read a recent article on what would happen if a local nuclear war would happen. Do you know if America or anybody blows up anything remotely nuclear, am I saying like the idiot?
Nuclear.
Yeah, the amount of damage it would reap on the Earth just by nature, by virtue of the hole it would blow in the ozone, is irreparable. Sometimes I don't even want to get into that trajectory. I don't want to get into the trajectory of what do you call it? Catastrophic thinking, because I'm trying to be optimistic here on some level. I'm trying to think that there is some hope in the world. All right, Tommy, listening to KTLK out in Torrance. How are you? You're on the air with Mark Maron.
Mark.
Yes.
I think Randy and Mike are forming a third-party ticket to run for the presidency.
they're certainly good with the nuanced politics, and I think that would be an interesting ticket. I wonder if they could beat Ron Paul out as an independent.
pulling out Iraq, you know, that would be a good opportunity for us to finally see how the Iraqis would choose to govern their own country. Now, it'd be a mess, of course. Yes, it'd be a mess, but they'd figure it out. And our embassy would essentially become a refinery, because we would make a backdoor deal with Iran. So there'd be one pipeline coming from Basra going to our embassy and the other one going to Iran, and everyone will be happy.
Or else it would just become a very high-priced Iranian resort hotel.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for calling. Yeah, well, that's interesting because in terms of me being involved in thinking along these lines on a day-to-day basis when I don't have a radio show to do, I had not thought. See, my brain always went to the fact that I believe the United States, despite you know whoever is president, would leave a force there. I never thought that anybody would pull everybody out, not after they invested $1 billion into an embassy. It doesn't matter who's president. I don't know what Congress would do with that. A lot of cultural change would have to occur in order for people to change their minds around that stuff. But I just assumed that there would be somebody there forever, for the end of time.
Well, I think what you're talking about, too, about the whole rebranding aspect, you know, there's the article that the Iraq war is costing every American household $100 a month. Just like how that could be rebranded, too. Isn't your freedom worth $3 a day?
Yeah, but I don't think it's worth $3 a day at the you know, the excess of 4,000 American lives and almost hundreds of thousands of people.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
And the whole idea about the surge and the idea that I don't hear a lot, I'm sure Mike has talked about it, is that they're dealing with the last people standing mm-hmm. there outside of the government. I mean, I read today that 5 million people have left that country and gone to other countries. 5 million people. Mm-hmm. So the people that were smart enough or rich enough or had connections enough to leave have left. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems that what's there is really just tribal entities, people too poor to leave, and the government itself and American forces, and of course contractors.
Yeah, it's like the Superdome after Katrina.
Yeah, I would hope it's a little better than that, but I'd probably go with that. I think I would go with that. Here we go. How about William? I'm listening to WINZ in Miami, Florida. How are you, William? You're talking to Mark Maron on the air. William.
Hello. Yes, Mark.
Yes, sir.
First of all, the question I have is, why are we there? And it's all because of oil, and who's pulling George Bush's strings? Isn't it the Olympians that they have key employees in the U.S. government for over 60 years?
The who?
The Olympians, the ones who are running the world.
The Olympians?
You never heard of the Olympians? The Illuminati, the
Skull and Bones. The Skull and Bones, the Olympians,
connected.
The Illuminati. Absolutely.
They're all connected to one, so they have key members in high-ranking political offices that making sure they get things done how they want. Now they have a president, he's overspending for this war.
Thank you, William. On some level, I believe that sometimes the Olympians are running me on bad days. I think that what he's referring to, the Olympians, might be the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the international banking community. That there is a they, and they do meet once a year to discuss who is going to be in charge. And oddly, I think that this particular group of idiots, that the neocon death cult, I think that they actually executed a coup against the better interests of the global banking system, the global economic monitors, the people in the little rooms, the Illuminati, the Freemason conspiracy, the Rosicrucians, the Knights of Malta, all of them, the Bilderberger group, that these guys who are running the country now actually pissed that group off and literally are a bunch of pirates. That don't care about killing Americans. They don't care about who dies. They don't care about what kind of chaos they made. They have made billions of dollars for themselves and their family. I just hope to God 200 years from now the currency isn't called the Cheney and there is nothing but space colonies. And all that's left down here are people that have evolved gills enough to live in sludge and garbage and breathe the air. We'll be back in a second. It's Marin in from Malloy.
Baby, you just a farm on. Never any proof. When you're gonna stop telling those lies? Hey there, Mr. President, when you're gonna start doing what's right and stop wasting more lives? When you're gonna bring the troops back home?
All right, Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy. Sitting here with my buddy Don from Levittown. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, buddy. Can I say you look fantastic today? That run really helped.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, man. I'm just glad I got to the gym. You know, some days I spend the entire day almost going. Almost going. Very active almost. I get up. I intend to go. I got into my head to go. I'm going to go. Why'd I waste the money on the gym? I'd better go. I'm getting fat. And then I get into that weird time frame where I'm saying things like this to myself. Whoa, man. I've only got 4 hours. It's going to take me 10 minutes to get there. I'm going to be on the thing for 20. I don't think there's any way that I'm going to make it. No, 4 hours. But today I did it. I crossed over. Because if you get into that swamp, man, if you get into that swamp where you're just like, it's time for ice cream. Hey, maybe I need another cookie. Maybe I wish I could eat in my sleep. If you're in that area, you're far from the gym. Your mind and heart are far away from taking care of yourself, my friend. Bob Dylan, Pulitzer Prize winner. Thank God. That's all I'm saying. I've actually had people say to me, yeah, Bob, I don't like Bob Dylan. That's like saying, I don't like air. I don't like air. You know, food's not that great. How can you dismiss that career? I'm actually dating a woman right now who says to me, I don't really like Bob Dylan. I'm like, you can't say that. You can say, I don't like Bob Dylan 1965 through 1975 or 1976. I don't like the Rolling Thunder Bob Dylan. I don't like the really early Woody Guthrie Bob Dylan. You know, I don't like the Michael Bloomfield Highway 61 Bob Dylan. You know, I don't like the Christian Bob Dylan. I don't like the old Bob Dylan where he sounds like he's in a cave, man. But you can't just dismiss the whole thing. Because if you do, I got to dismiss you. Is that hard? Is that wrong? And I stand by the fact, see, in my mind, we'll get back to important stuff. Yeah, you know me. Some of you know me. I'd rather talk about this anyways. Yeah, I could talk about the other stuff, but there's some part of me that at this point in my life, I don't know what it is, folks. Maybe it's the mid-40s thing. I know Mikey's in his 60s. He just had a baby. I don't think the baby thing's going to happen to me. For me. I don't know. It happened to me. I already am a baby. That I know. But I don't know if the baby thinks, but I'm trying to find a little happiness because in my mind, I'm at least halfway done with whatever this game is. And I'm trying to find some happiness. And I just find that a definition of a genius, the definition of a genius to me is somebody that you develop a relationship with, whose work you develop a relationship with at some point in your life, usually when you're younger. And no matter what point in your life you go back to that work, you find something new. It speaks to you in a different way. It evolves. It somehow grows with you, and it gets deeper as you get older. And there's a few people that I've found that with. And Bob Dylan, I know it's no surprise, I'm not the only person that has this relationship with him. And I'm not some hippie, really, but I got it in me. I am wearing a little bit of patchouli, though. You know, I also occasionally eat meat. So, you know, but Bob Dylan deserves every reward he gets. And I'll say it again, I said it before, Bob Dylan has answered all the questions. If you want to know the truth, it's in there. He's like the Kabbalah. This is a guy that's been making music for, what, 40 years, 50 years already?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
He's like the Kabbalah. He seriously is. I'm going to Australia. Someone's IAing me to talk about Australia. I am going to Australia on Saturday. I just found out the date I was leaving. Apparently, they work in a different time frame. I got a gig there starting next Monday, and when you go to Australia, I think you lose a week or something. Like, I get there, it's next week, and I'm looking forward to that, to know what's happened in the world before everybody else. But I'm sure that joke's been done. Jeez, I'm almost embarrassed that I did it. Hold on. Let's talk to Sanchez. Sanchez, it's Marin. You're on the air.
The only Bob Dylan I don't like is the naked Bob Dylan. Otherwise, I can get into pretty much anything else, man.
Where'd you get the naked Bob Dylan, Sanchez? What are you talking about, man? Do you know something we don't know? Were you part of some weird entourage and went backstage back in the 70s and got all high with Bob and everyone got naked and you had a bad response to that?
It was actually 1969, but yeah, you're picturing it correctly.
Get out of here. Did you see him in 1969? Seriously.
No, I didn't. I'm just trying to joke with you, man. I wish I would have, but no, I'm just not into that kind of a period, you know?
Yeah, I know. You're like a groovy grooves guy. You're like a Mr. Make the Mix guy.
Yes, exactly.
I know.
You should hear my latest mashup, man. I'll send it to you at some point. You know what, man? It sounds like you've never left the radio. It sounds like yesterday that you left. Man, you're just falling right into it. what do we have to do to get you back on the radio, man?
It took me about a half hour to fall into it. You know, up till right up until this segment just now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like I was kind of floundering and spinning, and then I realized, hey, wait a minute, it's not morning, I'm well rested, I have thoughts about things,
yeah.
It's not my job
yeah.
to report the news, Sanchez is on hold, that guy likes me,
yeah.
I'm doing okay.
There you go, man.
What do you got to do to get me on the radio? I don't know. It seems that a lot of radio stations have a problem with comics.
Man, I wanted to talk to you about Iraq, can you put me on hold?
Well, call me back. Yeah, I'll put you on hold.
Okay.
That was Sanchez. He makes me. I think I dropped him. Dude, call back. Sorry. I'm just getting used to this new screen. There are buttons I got to push with a fake hand on a monitor, and I don't know about these computers. What do you just click this? Oh my God! What have I done? Am I still on? Why am I talking like that guy? Who do I sound like? Look, we'll talk more about Bob Dylan. I want to talk about John McCain. I would like to answer some of these questions about Obama. I'll share the story, Krista. We'll get to all of that. It's Marinim for Malloy. It's coming up on the top of the hour. Thanks for being here. We'll be back with Don from Levittown as well. Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, know-it-alls. You know who you are. You know-it-alls. You passive-aggressive strident sorts. I know who you are. It's Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy. Don't panic. He's not gone. He's coming back. He's taking a rest. A well-deserved vacation Mr. Malloy is having. So feel good for him. That's what I say. I'm going to Australia on Saturday. I have no idea what I'm going to be doing there other than I stand in front of groups of people and tell them what I've been thinking about and writing down on pieces of paper, and hopefully they laugh. My buddy Don from Levittown is in the house with me here.
Hello, America.
Did I say in the house? I'm trying to not say. You know what I'm saying an awful lot that I really don't want to say is bro. A lot of bros. A lot of bros are coming out of my mouth. I don't know if that's coming across on the radio. I think I've been okay about it, but I just recorded a CD up in Seattle, my latest stand-up comedy CD, a new hour of material. It's my third CD, and I got off stage, and the guy's recording. It says, a lot of bros, dude. I said, a lot of bros, dude? Were there any dudes, bro? He said, no, there's a lot of bros, dude. So we'll see how that goes. I'm going to get back to you, Sanchez. You know, stay on the line. We got some calls on the line. We're still talking. We're still a little all over the place, but we are talking about Iraq. And we are talking about John McCain. I haven't started talking about John McCain. I haven't begun to talk about John McCain, but he scares me. He scares me. Now, we heard General Petraeus say today, we haven't turned any corners. We haven't seen any lights at the end of the tunnel. The champagne bottle has been pushed to the back of the refrigerator, and the progress, while real, is fragile and is reversible. That's the general in charge. Hasn't anything changed? Seriously. And then John McCain, literally on the same page of copy here, says, quote, we're no longer staring into the abyss of defeat, and we can now look ahead to the genuine process of success, unquote. So now we are staring into the abyss of failure. Apparently, McCain gets his abysses confused, but believe me, it's always an abyss with John McCain. Now, I know this has gotten some play. I'm terribly uncomfortable with McCain because I know that even smart people that I know, people I respect, find him endearing, find him smart. And these are Democrats are charmed by him. I don't know what it is. There are some people that just enjoy a sassy old guy. And I'm not going to mock him for his age. I don't mind having a 90-year-old president. I don't mind that. It's okay with me. I don't want one. I don't want him. But what scares me about John McCain is very basic. In my mind, the way I interpret McCain's being is that deep down, he's still a man in a cage. I believe he's still a man in a cage, and I believe that every day of his life, he seeks to get out of that cage however possible. It's not his fault. He was taken as a prisoner of war in a difficult war. He stayed alive somehow. He was a prize prisoner. because his father was an admiral in the Navy that was overseeing much of the operations in Vietnam, to my understanding. So they kept him alive. He chose to stay a prisoner for as long as the ones he was being held captive with were being held captive. He may or may not have given information. I don't know. He may or may not have had Stockholm Syndrome. I don't know. He was a returning hero, but in my mind, he's still a man in a cage. And when he disregarded Barack Obama's statement, that Barack Obama on the campaign trail was saying, I voted against the war resolution, which he did. And not too long ago, about a month ago, I guess, McCain said in response to that, that's old news. That's old news. The way these Republicans think, the way they're willing to immediately revise history or to sweep it under the, just throw it under the bus, sweep it under the mat, whatever the hell the analogy is. The idea that he's willing to dismiss that means that he's willing to dismiss the fact that we went into that war on a lie. He's willing to dismiss the fact that the Republicans have been lying to us all along, throughout the war, even now, with General Petraeus today. He's willing to dismiss the fact that this war is strengthening terrorism worldwide and training terrorists by using our soldiers as targets and in using Iraq as a way to develop strategy. And he's just willing to dismiss the reality that the surge is almost non-consequential in the sense that 5 million people have left that country. So if they can't manage what's left now, if it's still fragile, then there's some real issues here. And my big fear is that McCain will snap in public, which he's able to do and he does frequently, and say, we can still win Vietnam. This war, despite the fact that it is in a desert, does not look unlike Vietnam in the ambiguousness of the enemy, in not knowing whose side who's on, in not being able to even read our allies in this situation. And you would hope that somebody like John McCain would learn from history. You would hope that somebody like John McCain would have some sort of wisdom around this other than the desire, the deep desire to release his anger, the anger of a man in a cage in a war that was not won. And that scares me. It scares me because he's a loose cannon. He's a loose cannon with his mouth, and some people find that charming. They just came out with this book, the book that's coming out, The Real McCain by Cliff Schechter. Some snippets. What's the word that people use in the professional media game when there's excerpts? Excerpts is the word I'm looking for. And everybody's talking about this. I talked to Sam Cedar about it the other day. And to me, he has said a lot of things publicly. You know, bomb, 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 bomb Iran. We're going to be in Iraq for 100 years. He doesn't know the difference between Shia and Sunni. He said a lot of things that were dangerous to me. But everyone's hanging on this one. Sam Cedar, in relation to his wife, apparently they were, it was during a campaign. His wife was on the campaign trail with him in 1992 when he was running for Senate. And his wife, Cindy, apparently played with his hair and said, quote, you're getting a little thin up there, unquote. And McCain's face apparently reddened and he responded, quote, at least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you, rhymes with stunt, unquote. Was that a delicate way to do that? Now, my fear is, this is just the kind of talk that will endear McCain to some people in this country. It's just the kind of talk that the weird thing about McCain, not unlike the moron we have in office now, is that there's a certain type of lughead that really likes him because they're guys. You know, he's one of us. He's just an old guy. He likes to call his wife a stunt. You know, who hasn't done that? Now, granted, you know, I'm not saying it was beyond me either. I mean, I am a man. I've had some ugly moments. But I'm also not running for president. But McCain, more than anybody else, scares me. And the only hope that I have around this, and the only hope that I really hope that the Republican Party doesn't want to win this. I mean, McCain, he raised about $50 million last month, which is okay. It doesn't feel like everybody's on board yet. There's part of me that believes the Republicans want to lose this race. It's going to be a very difficult presidency. And again, I'm very impressed with Obama stepping up today. I don't have to. I can pick sides. It's not my job. I'm not a reporter. I'm not a journalist. I'm not towing some sort of party line. I'm going to gamble on Obama. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Because I believe that a president's job, you know, outside of making decisions, is to be a symbolic leader. I always had a big problem with people who criticize Obama for being eloquent and lofty. Charisma, the ability to lead, and the ability for people to believe in you is a gift, and it's a leadership quality, and it's a very important one. And if he can become a symbol for what this country could be, or just even a symbol to the rest of the world that we're not some sort of ridiculous backwater republic incapable of ethnic diversity on any level, then I'm all for that. And then if he makes good decisions, that's even better. I believe that that he will. And I'm not ashamed of that. I'm a little nervous. I don't know. I mean, who knows? This might be a historic opportunity for black people to be misrepresented by one of their own. Who knows? God knows we have. You know, let's pass the baton. Let's see what happens. Is there anything wrong with that? I'm taking calls on things. 800-989-1480. I will get to you, Sanchez. I will get to you, Krista. And now Chris in Charleston, Rhode Island. I think it's time to talk to you. Because I see on the screen it says, don't trust Obama. Now, if that's about a madrasa or that he's some sort of Muslim Manchurian candidate, I don't want to take that call. But I'm going to. All right. Stay here. It's Marin from Malloy. I'm here with Don from Levittown. I love you. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Go, 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 go. Cold. Where's my staff? Where's my staff, Don?
You couldn't budget him, buddy.
No kidding. Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy.
He could probably get volunteers on the phone.
To get me coffee? To get come you. In here? They locked down the building. We're Clear Channel. We're in the big cultural id mill. It's the id mill. Out of this building streams many levels of consciousness, some of them fairly unenlightened down the hall, others relatively enlightened like me, and some not even trying to be enlightened, just parlaying information to the people of the planet. But look, we got things going on. I'm talking about Obama. I'm talking about the courage of a man to stand up and say we must talk to Iran. Of course we must. What else there is to do? Somebody's got to talk to China, too. Someone's got to slow that ship down. What's going to happen to this? Oh.
You said ship, didn't you?
Hi, folks. I'm sorry. I was misheard. I said the ship of China, the ship sailing. Somebody's got to stop that ship, is what I said. It was misunderstood by some, but that was what came out of my mouth, and I think the tape will prove that. Well, let's talk to Sanchez, who called earlier. Sanchez, what's on your mind, man? What were you saying?
Okay, well, thanks for putting me back on. Three significant points that happened a few weekends ago. First, it started with Dick Cheney when he visited the Saudi royal family, King Abdullah, and all of the ministers. And there were two points out of it. He was trying to get the price of oil lowered. He was unsuccessful doing that. But the more important point, whatever he told King Abdullah and the ministers, the following day in the Oka's paper. This is one of the top government-sanctioned newspapers in Saudi Arabia, and they relayed this information saying that the Saudi government is now preparing plans to deal with any sudden nuclear and radioactive hazards that may arise from an attack on Iran's nuclear reactors. And that was reported by OCAS. Then, after that weekend, the following weekend, Bush, I don't know if you heard about this, but Bush was making a three-day meetings with his top military officials. Now, the official cover that was given to the press was that, oh, they're discussing troop pullout strategies for 3 days meeting with his top military brass and all
okay,
of his officials.
All right.
Then the following point is this. Should there be a plan of attack on Iran or any kind of escalation in military activity in Iraq, this goes to favor John McCain because you know how the sheeple are, man. You know how they
behave. Yeah. But I don't believe. Thanks for your comment.
Okay, man.
I don't believe. I'm one of these people that despite whatever information is coming down the pike, I do not believe that they're going to attack Iran. I do not believe it. Maybe I'm being naive. Maybe I'm being stupid. Maybe I'm not reading the writing on the wall. But I just don't see how they can do it. It's not even a matter of troops either. It's a matter of practicality. I mean, if they attack Iran, that means Iraq is completely untethered. And who the hell knows what's going to happen then? I just don't think they're going to do it. I know Cy Hurst says they're going to do it. I know that a lot of people believe that they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to do it. And I think that Obama's approach is ultimately the only right approach. If McCain gets in, I don't even know what's going to happen. I don't even know what's going to happen. All I know is we can't afford it, and it's probably going to be the end of the planet. So those two things are stopping me from even addressing that. But I just don't think they're going to do it. And again, maybe I'm naive. Somebody set me straight. James is listening on Sirius in Columbus, Ohio. Tell me what I don't know. You're on the air with Mark Maron.
Hello?
Hi. What's up, James?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay, man. You say I got it wrong?
Yeah, I'm sitting up here, and I've been listening to you. And okay, first of all, I'll start off with Barack, okay? He goes over there and talks to Iran, right?
Yeah.
What are you willing to give Iran to quit talking? What are you willing to give up? So that's what it would be if he, you know, that's one reason why in Iraq we're in the situation we're in now, because people such as thinking of yourself has tied our hands so much to where we wasn't able to do what needs to be done.
That's not true. I don't think that people like myself, are you kidding? It was Donald Rumsfeld. If you believe in the war and you stand behind it, they should have listened to Shinseki and put 300 people on the ground so we wouldn't still be there. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I think you're wrong. And I think on some level, diplomacy is going to have to be necessary.
Well,
what kind of
diplomacy do you want? The man already said what he wants to do to him. So that's just like if you tell, how many times
are you going
to keep telling somebody
so? I'll tell you what kind of diplomacy. If you want to keep saber rattling, if you want to keep standing there saying, well, mine's bigger than yours, and play chicken and push a guy over the edge, that's fine. There's always room for negotiations. The planet runs on negotiations. That's how commerce works. That's how plans are made. That's how things are bartered. That's what has to happen if we don't want to have a zero-sum game and end up all, you know, with nuclear dust on our heads. Thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it. I guess we're going out. See you on the other side of this. Marin in for Malloy. Love you.
right. How about a little Bon Scott? Marin in for Malloy. That's Mark Marin to you, mister. You can call me Mr. Marin, ma'am. Now I'm just rambling. My buddy Don from Levittown on the other mic, being patient, waiting for me to shut up for 2 seconds so maybe get a word in edgewise.
Because they're all tuning in for Don from Levittown right now.
I'm introducing a new radio personality, Don from Levittown. Folks, we're talking about John McCain, but now I got to talk about AC/DC because I told Ian, who's on the board there in Phoenix, I am without a producer this week because I don't have a producer anymore. But he's taking care of me from the board in Phoenix, and I'm out here in L.A. looking at NBC Studios, eating a Twizzler, talking to you people without nicotine gum, which is difficult. Listening to Bon Scott, AC/DC, as a progressive person, I do take responsibility for some of my more rebellious likes and loves. I'm a huge AC/DC fan, and despite the fact that it makes women I'm dating, like literally there are people, we're talking about Dylan, there are people that despise bands so much that it may put you on the fence with them. Like, they're it's an obstacle to get through, bro. I did it, bro.
You did it, bro. But it's all right, bro. Because AC/DC will probably be with you a lot longer than she will.
Look, it's a guaranteed buzz. I don't do drugs anymore. I don't drink. There are certain songs that I grew up with that I know if I put it on, within 45 seconds, my endorphins are going to rush. I'm going to be pounding my dashboard. I'm going to be driving fast. I'm going to feel like I'm 15 again. And I'm going to want to, you know, do some damage. But I don't. I just sort of sit and enjoy the buzz.
I understand, bro. That's how we spend my birthday, remember?
I do. Driving around listening to AC. the adrenaline rush car ride. Me and my buddy Cliff, who we used to call Sniff in college, we used to do a thing called the AC/DC cruise. We'd get in my car with 240s. He'd have one. I'd have one. And we'd drive until listening to AC/DC exclusively until the 40s were gone. And then we'd pull another one out and drive back to wherever we were. Hey, it was a good time. So let's get back to important things. We're talking about John McCain. I know this has gotten some play on the air in other places, but I just picked it up off my buddy's blog. Maybe I'm a little late to the table on this. But this is was sent to me as the truth about John McCain. There are 10 things here that I'll share with you. I'm sure you probably heard it. But maybe you haven't. Why do I got to say that? What, am I insecure? Yes, a little sometimes. Is that okay? Is that a problem with you people? Come on, I'm sensitive. I have cats. I'm just a man. One, John McCain voted against establishing a national holiday in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now he says his position has evolved, yet he's continued to oppose key civil rights laws. It's evolved in what? I'd like him to explore that. I'd like to talk about race a little bit in a way that's genuinely curious. We can do that in a minute. We've got some more time here. Two, according to Bloomberg News, McCain is more hawkish than Bush on Iraq, Russia, and China. Conservative columnist Pat Buchanan says McCain, quote, will make Cheney look like Gandhi, end quote. I don't even know what that means. Given that I just spent 2 hours watching the Zeitgeist movie, and I swear that footage is pretty convincing where you see Tower 7 and the close-up where you see Cheney with one of those old discharge, those detonators. he's pushing down on old TNT, Wile E. Coyote-style blow-up-the-building thing. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Made a believer out of me.
Apparently, Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad. Is that how you say it? Ahmadinejad? The Iranian head guy, Iranian president. Apparently, he's part of the 9/11 truth movement.
Yeah. He was wearing a t-shirt when he said this.
Yeah, he said, of the September 11 events, he said the names of those killed in the attacks, quote, had never been published, unquote. Apparently, he's reading the same websites,
some of our buddies are.
That's for sure. So where am I? Number three, McCain's reputation is built on his opposition to torture, but McCain voted against a bill to ban waterboarding and then applauded President Bush for vetoing that ban. Because I think he believes that waterboarding, that's wussy compared to what he went through. You want torture, be hugged from your arms backwards. So it makes you know, that's why he's like that. Four, McCain opposes a woman's right to choose. He said, quote, I do not support Roe versus Wade. It should be overturned, unquote. Five, the Children's Defense Fund rated McCain as the worst senator in Congress for children. He voted against the children's health care bill last year, then defended Bush's veto of the bill. Six, he's one of the richest people in a Senate filled with millionaires. The Associated Press reports he and his wife own at least 8 homes, yet McCain says the solution of the housing crisis is for people facing foreclosure to get a second job and skip their vacations.
That's, you know, it's pretty scary, man. Whatever's left of the middle class is going to start to live in boxes. I don't know what the hell it takes people to wake up in this country. I just had to refinance my home, which, thank God, I think I get to keep. And it's scary, man. And I got perfect credit. I got a little bread coming in, but I was able to get a reasonable mortgage, a 30-year fix. But those other loans are rackets. And the way that they deregulated that industry and let those people run roughshod over people's money and dreams. Granted, I got to be honest with you. Someone offers you a house with no money down, I would question that. You know what I mean? It's like basically saying, here, just take it. Here's your house. I would question that. You got to put a little bread down. Seven, many of McCain's fellow Republican senators say he's too reckless to be commander-in-chief. One Republican senator said, the thought of his being a president sends a cold chill down my spine. He's erratic, he's hot-headed, he loses his temper, and he worries me. Unquote. If anyone knows who that senator was, do my research for me. Tell me. Eight, McCain talks a lot about taking on special interests, but his campaign manager and top advisors are actually lobbyists. The government watchdog group, Public Citizen, says McCain has 59 lobbyists raising money for his campaign, more than any of the other presidential candidates. This guy's bad news for a million different reasons. Nine, McCain has sought closer ties to the extreme religious right in recent years. The pastor McCain calls his spiritual guide, Rod Parsley, believes America's founding mission is to destroy Islam, which he calls a false religion. McCain sought the political support of right-wing preacher John Hagee, who believes Hurricane Katrina was God's punishment for gay rights, and called the Catholic Church the Antichrist and a false cult. Well, he's not all wrong. Ten, he positions himself as a pro-environment, but he scored a zero, yes, zero, from the League of Conservation Voters last year. Well, you know, there's a long history of Republicans aligning themselves with whack job Christians who believe it's the destiny of a Christian nation to completely annihilate all Muslims, and at the very least, destroy the Dome of the Rock, which sits in the middle of Jerusalem, one of the, I think it's the second holiest shrine in the religion of Islam. And apparently, if they don't scrap it, Jesus cannot return. So there's a big movement of Christian money to Israel, right-wing Christian money to Israel, and of course there's the standard right-wing Zionist money to Israel, and a lot of what's going on in terms of the positioning of the embassy in Iraq and our place in Iraq has a lot to do with Israel. But let's talk to Delbert, listening to Sirius in Amarillo, Texas. Delbert, you're on the air, buddy. What's up? Delbert?
Yes, hello.
How are you, buddy?
Well, I'm enjoying you expose John McCain there, and I'd like to add a little bit something to that.
Bring it.
He likes to brag about his judgment. But I heard him 3 or 4 weeks ago say that knowing what we know now, it was the right thing to do to invade Iraq.
That guy just loves war, Delbert. He just has a chip on his shoulder. He wants to be part of a war that he can win. Appreciate your call, buddy. You know, he's a true hawk. He was, from what I understand, maybe I'm mistaken, maybe you have information on this that I don't know about, maybe someone can correct me. I'm not the greatest at doing homework. But I have heard that McCain was the neocons' first choice to lead their coup.
Really?
Over George W. Bush. But McCain was obviously too unstable, and they found a better Manchurian candidate. They're like, wait, we can just take the Bush kid and we can hook wires right up to his head and they'll do whatever we want? That's tremendous. McCain still has a personality.
Well, look what happened to him in South Carolina when he was running against them.
Right. That
looks like the perfect cutting him off at the legs.
Yeah, they took him down. But that's what I heard. I heard that to be true. Now, we're going to ease into Obama in a minute. Let's talk to Debbie, listening on the internet in New Jersey. Hello, Debbie. You're on with Mark Maron. How are you?
How are you?
What a sweet voice you have.
Snuggle up close and put my arm around you.
Oh, thank you.
I love you. No bull. AC/DC.
Yeah. Is that all right with you?
Oh, I love it. Anyway.
Yeah.
I have two comments. Mm. My first comment is I so sorely miss you from New York radio. And the Cardinal.
I know. Old
Honest
Jim.
Honest to God, every day of my life I'm like, I miss those guys.
For someone who's not listening, that was a character that we used to do on the old morning show. I missed that whole crew. I missed doing that kind of radio. To be honest with you, Morning's Edition was such a weird opportunity. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we had all these talented guys and we were all up in the middle of the night doing, you know, overworking ourselves to create all these theatrical bits. And it was such an amazing mix of people and personalities. And I just don't think it could ever happen again. Not for a reasonable amount of money, that's for sure.
No, I know. And I saw you live at the Tea Lounge.
At the Tea Lounge. Oh, how was that? Oh, at the live show when we did that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, now I know why you like AC/DC, because you probably look good in shorts. But anyway, the comment about McCain,
yeah,
you know, with his wife, you know, like, who knows? Maybe she responded, yeah, I'm a man-eating blunt.
Yeah, that's right. I, you know, that's one of those things that I think, well, thanks for your call, Debbie, and I appreciate the support, and you take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's one of those comments that people are going to hang on to. You know, there's a sort of a idea on the left that now we can fight like they fight. And I think that's relatively true. But the thing is that comment, calling your wife that in a moment of hostility, it happens. That's not the thing to hang the case on with McCain. There's a long list of other things, bigger transgressions that have cost people lives, that have cost people money, decisions on his Senate record. I mean, the calling the wife that, and maybe she is. Maybe she is. Has anyone entertained that? Have you met her? I mean, they do exist, you know. They do exist. It's Marin from Malloy. Stay with us. I'm here with Don from Levittown. Having a great time. Love you, people. Towards the top of the hour, I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Mr. Mike Malloy, who's enjoying a vacation that I'm sure he deserves. I'm here with my buddy Don from Levittown.
What's up, Mark?
Well, I'm just hanging out and looking at some IMs. I'm doing that thing. I'm juggling IMs here. We were talking about John McCain, talking about the gaffe with his wife. Someone said, would I do that in public? Well, you know, obviously it's not... Look, you know, I am a guy that has had to deal with an anger problem. Then I get another email from people watching my back here. It says, you better lay off the, steer away from the misogyny, bro. Now, I don't know. I don't know that I was being misogynistic right there. I don't know. By saying that maybe she is, that's misogynistic because of that word. I don't know. I've used that word. Does that word mean you're a misogynist? Does that word, using that word, the C word, mean you're a misogynist? It's very effective in making women hate you. So it seems to have a reverse effect, that word actually makes women hate men.
I think it all depends whether she threw the full can of Pepsi at you while you were driving before you used the word.
Well, I mean, fighting and rage are difficult things. Anger is a difficult thing. And obviously public displays of anger and embarrassing your wife in public and having those kind of interactions is irresponsible. It's loose cannonition. And I guess I have to rethink what I said then because I didn't really take it into consideration. Obviously it was in public. And you say that to a woman in public, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad to do that in public. I mean, you know, when you see people on movie lines fighting, it's a very strange dynamic. I was on a movie line in New York City. I was with my wife. She was my wife at the time, and she's not my wife now. But I was on a movie line with her, and there were two couples in the line ahead of us. and one of the couples, they were all just talking. And all of a sudden, one of the guys and one of the couples pops the woman he's with in the head. And it was one of those moments where it's like, what? Somebody did, you know, and the other couple did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone online did nothing. There's this strange bubble around domestic violence, certainly in public, where all of a sudden people are like, don't get involved. No one's going to get involved. I didn't get involved, but you don't think to get involved. I mean, the couple they were with didn't get involved. It was the most heinous thing that it made me feel so polluted. Because what do you do? I mean, it wasn't like he beat her up. It was this backhanded thing, and it was just heinous to watch. But I don't think that I am misogynistic. I hate two or three women. I know why I hate them. I know where they live, and it's for righteous reasons. And maybe hate's a strong word, but you know what I'm saying. Let's take a call from Krista. Has been waiting a long time. I don't know what this is about, but I know Krista. How are you, Krista, in Phoenix? KPHX,
hey, Mark, how you doing, buddy?
How do I sound? Do I sound healthy and grounded?
You sound pretty good. You sound pretty good for what you've been going through.
why does it have to be qualified?
Well, I mean, you know, you're pretty open about what you're going through, and
yeah.
We all know you're going through a divorce now,
yeah.
and it's a little bit messy, and you know, I've never been through a divorce, but you know, I can sympathize. I've seen people going through divorces, and it's messy.
Okay, well, what do you got before we run out of time? You got a short story or is it a long story?
Well, no, it's real short. You know, I just wanted to you know, I mean, I've been real depressed lately. You know, I've been having a hard time finding work, as you know. But I had a moment of human kindness that just kind of warmed my cockles. I was at my local Trader Joe's, and I had a few little groceries, and I went to pay, and my debit card was gone. I didn't, you know, it's like, where's my debit card? And the cashier paid for my groceries for me. He slided his debit card through, and he paid for my groceries. And I said, well, I'll come back, and I'll pay you back. I mean, I got the money, you know.
Right.
And he said, no, don't worry about it. And I said, well, okay, well, I'll come back and I'll bring you a mug. I'm a ceramic artist. I make things. I'll bring you something, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, he was such a nice guy. And you know, and it was like, you know, it's just, and it's just something I want to point to is this, like, community, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just getting to community, getting to know the people that you deal with on a weekly basis.
Yeah, as long as it's nice to be dealing with people. I mean, if you really think about how many, yeah, that was a very nice gesture. Did you bring him a mug?
I had seen me come in there all the time. You know, I got a streak in my hair. I'm recognizable. Plus, I was buying the kinds of things that he liked. I was buying sake, and he liked sake. So, you know, and it's just about getting to a local level. That's how we're going to beat corporations.
I think you're right, Krista.
Local level.
Thank you so much for calling. It's good to talk to you. I'm sorry you're depressed, but it sounds like that was an uplifting moment for you. That's the Stones. We're coming up on the top of the hour. We're coming into the last hour. I want to talk about race. I think I got to talk about misogyny a little bit too. It looks like that's kind of a loaded barrel. So please, thank you for being with us, and please stay with us and enjoy the break. Go pee, do something. Me and Don will be here. We'll talk to you on the other side. You're listening to Marin in for Malloy, 800-989-1480. Love you. After the top of the hour here, you're listening to Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy, who is just on vacation. Don't panic. Do not panic. I'm here with my buddy Don from Levittown.
Hey, Mark.
One of the original suburbs. One of those post-war places, a prepackaged for people in the armed forces to come and live the community life as they designed it.
Hey, can I,
what?
Can I say hi to two guys who are, who've come to this country and are living the American dream as we speak?
Yeah.
Tony, Oliver, thanks for the work, buddies. I'll see you later.
Is that cryptic? Do I know those guys?
I don't think so. But you might. You might. Just stay out of legal trouble.
Okay, buddy. Now I'm nervous. Let me run through a few IMs, a couple of phone calls here. Mark, this is from an IMer. I never know if I can say people's names because you never know. They can be, yeah, you know, I'm not going to. Mark, have you discussed how Petraeus seems to be being groomed for eventual political career a la Eisenhower? People like my dad are brainwashed into thinking this guy is so intellectual while he waged a political campaign to court Congress as they visited Iraq before the surge concept. He's an effing liar. Who's going to call him out? Well, I'll call him out. It doesn't take much to call him out. The facts don't just line up. They just don't line up. I think this surge is a failure. I think the fact that the country has been almost abandoned and they can't even manage what's left, and he's calling it fragile at this point in time. He may be diplomatic in the way he speaks, but there's, in my mind, there's no way he isn't lying. And Eisenhower was successful in terms of it was World War II. He was a hero for the most part. He was a tremendous leader in a war that we won. I think that this war is going to go down as a disaster. And whoever is president next, how they handle Petraeus and what that relationship is like, is going to be very interesting. I would be so interested to see what an Obama presidency would look like in the face of these adversities, these obstacles that this country has to cross over. I want to believe in Obama because I believe that he does have a certain amount of nads. I think he's a courageous guy, and I'd be really curious to see how he is at diplomacy. The fact that he's trying to reach out to Iran, which I think is the only solution. It's the only solution for anything. I truly believe that. Last resort on the war thing. Not just because you think it's the right thing to do or to protect resources. I mean, if it's a real threat. And a lot of people see Iran as a real threat. But who knows? Sometimes, at the last minute, you know, marriages are settled. Right before the divorce. So I don't think he's being groomed to be an Eisenhower unless this war takes an entirely different track and becomes a success. I don't think so. But it was an interesting question. Okay. Steven? Is it Steven? Listening in Burbank, California to KTLK. How you doing, buddy?
Just great, Mark. I always loved Morning Sedition. It woke me up, and it got me to read a book called Conservatives Without Conscience.
That's right.
Some
good
segue,
book.
Huh?
Yeah.
John Dean, 2006, on page 50, on page 59, double high authoritarian. Now, double, you know, the one would be follower and the other would be leader. You know, social dominator and right-wing authoritarian followers. And on page 68 and page 69, you wouldn't believe it. You look at social dominators, leaders, read down that list. You read down right-wing authoritarian followers, you read down that list, and it's textbook. John McCain is textbook example of what John Dean was talking about. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's the worst. He's the worst kind of conservative. He's also easily manipulated by larger powers than himself to do whatever they want. I find it very disturbing. Thanks for your call, Stephen. That is absolutely right. The weird thing about McCain in my mind is that because of his past, I think he has a weird ability to pander to a tremendous amount of money and also be this volatile, you know, whack job who might push a button at any second. That combination cannot be good in any way. Hey, let's talk to Stephanie. Listen, Madison, Wisconsin, the mic. What a great station.
Oh, man, it is so good to hear your voice. You know, I have really missed you guys. I was a big fan of Morning Sedition and really, really sad when you guys went off the air, and then of course eventually got rid of Mark Riley. They screwed, you know, messed him over.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was a long, complicated history dealing with a lot of regime change.
Yep. Man, that is the truth. It is just, it is so good to hear you. I'm so sorry to hear you're going through a divorce. I really am.
Awful.
I feel like I've lost friends, you know, and I'm kind of reconnecting with friends. You guys were just absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I just wanted all the things that you were talking about tonight. I loved your quote about Bob Dylan, anything you want to know. What is it? What did you say? How did you say it?
Oh, all questions are answered. All questions are answered in Bob Dylan's songbook somewhere.
Oh, I totally agree. The guy he's really, I'm a real believer that there are certain people, you know, we all have gifts and abilities. And, I believe in a higher power. God. And I think there are certain people that I don't want to call them necessarily prophets, but God, gives him special gifts and special abilities. You can't fake anything like that. And he's just very special.
He's a vessel.
And he is. He really, truly is.
Yeah.
And as far as, I do not believe you're a misogynist. I had can remember the two times I was called that word, the C bomb, and once was my daughter when she threw a clean basket of laundry at me. I just sat there and laughed at her. The first was when I was 20 years old, and it would just like hit me in the gut because it was like, so I was being called that name. But if you've gone to see the Vagina Monologues by
Eve Ensler,
you get a totally view of that, of the word, and you know we need to let go of the power.
Yeah, she disarms it. Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I love talking to you, Stephanie.
Thank you for calling. You too, Mark. Okay.
Bye. Yeah,
it's
a provocative word. I don't use it on stage. I used to do a bit about it. Zoe, maybe she'll set me straight. Zoe in Kentucky, how are you, dear?
Who's this?
This is Mark.
Oh, hi, honey. How are you?
I'm fine.
Aw.
What's going on?
Well, I was just calling to give you some more of the love and just,
Are you
IMing
as well?
Tell Ian that I'm not out of my mind.
Yeah, Ian, Zoe's not out of her mind. So now, Zoe, are we old friends?
Yeah. Hello?
So this is Zoe who's IMing me as well and sends me presents, right?
Yeah, lots of presents. I was so proud when you showed the lemon pie on the little cedar, video cast thing.
I made that lemon pie from that cookbook you sent me.
How cool was that?
But let me tell you, the glass ball, the glass orb. Zoe's an old fan from Morning Sedition.
Mm-hmm.
And she's,
the witch's ball. Isn't that great?
It's awesome. I hung it outside in front of my house. And the lemon pie, she gave me the recipe for a shaker lemon pie in a book from an inn in Kentucky where she comes from. And he got a slice of lemon. Listen to me, now it's a cooking show? How do we go from McCain to cooking? That's the beauty of
it. I think that you should totally do a left-wing cooking show. I think it would be the bomb.
Is that where you have too many cooks in the kitchen trying to decide on one thing?
No. But while you're sautéing, you could talk about Petraeus.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's sort of like, look, things are really bad, but how about cake?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yay, cake will make it.
You can put it all on the left burner,
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, there's only left burners.
There would be nothing sadder than watching a cooking show, a left-wing cooking show, and they're talking about the food shortage.
Yeah, exactly. But we still have flour here. But Zoe, I'm glad you're doing okay. Now, set me straight on this misogynist thing. I don't feel like I am misogynistic, but I think I might have some anger issues that are still unresolved. And
I think? I say that with love. I say that with love. The anger sometimes, the anger triggers the words. And that's the problem. It's not necessarily the word itself that is the problem. I mean, hell, there's a magazine now called Bitch.
Yeah.
But it means something completely different, and women have started to take it back. It is the force behind it. Carlin said this decades ago. It doesn't matter who uses what racist word. It's the racist you-know-whos, I think he said a-holes, that use the word that you got to worry about. And
the people that use
that word are the people that smack their girlfriend standing in line at the movie theater and don't expect anybody to do anything about it.
That's right. That's right. You're right. If the hate is there, if the hate is real, then the word is loaded.
Exactly. Stop the hate.
That's stop the hate. Thank you,
Lick
Zoe.
Lick the junk.
Yeah, I love you. Thanks for calling.
Love you too, sweetie.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, man. So now I want to talk about race. It's on my mind. We got a guy that's been holding forever. I think he actually is. No, he's still there. Talk about Obama.
Let's do this. Let's do the big work.
Okay. I'm with Don from Levittown. I'm Mark Maron. We're in from Malloy. Hang out a sec, will you? Please.
Eat it. Don't you make me repeat it. Have a banana. Have a whole bunch. It doesn't matter what you have. Eat it.
How's everybody doing? It's Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy. Malloy is on vacation. No worries. As they say in Australia, where I will be next week in Sydney at the Comedy Store if you're listening internationally. There was a certain lyricism to that. I'm Mark Maron. Did I mention that? Air America's, formerly Air America's Mark Maron. Now I'm just Mark Maron's Mark Maron. Freelancing. I'm my own guy, man. I am a puppet of no one or no thing. Occasionally, I'm an anger puppet of myself, which makes me say bad things. Apparently not unlike John McCain, but he's in a bigger position than I am. I'm with my buddy Don from Levittown.
Hey, Mark.
All right, buddy. So, look, someone just sent me a link to this Raw Story deal. It's more stuff from the book, from the McCain book, from the real McCain. Quoting, perhaps the most remarkable story of McCain's temper involved Arizona Congressman Rick Renzi. Two former reporters covering McCain, one who witnessed the following events and one who confirmed the facts provided by the first, related to me as follows. In 2006, the Arizona Republican congressional delegation had a strategy meeting. McCain repeatedly addressed two new members, Congressman Trent Franks and Rick Renzi, as boy. Finally, Renzi, a former college linebacker, rose from his chair and said to McCain, quote, you call me that one more time, and I'll kick your old ass, unquote. McCain lunged at Renzi, punches were thrown, and the two had to be physically separated after they went to their separate offices. McCain called Renzi and demanded an apology. Renzi refused. Apparently this posture made McCain admire him as they became fast friends. I think the calling the wife the C-word in public's worse than that. That's boy stuff. This is stupid boy stuff. But I think what's important to know is this guy's a hothead. He's a loose cannon. He can't be trusted. Has anger issues. And once he's in that anger, he can't stop it. That's bad news. Go ahead.
And the fact that he gets, the way to earn his respect is to throw blows at him. And, you know, that's the type of schoolyard guy stuff that I just cannot stand. You know, it's like it goes into that whole boys mythology that just has really gotten us where we are today, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not that guy. I'm not a punch thrower. Somehow or another, through diplomacy or otherwise, I've managed to not be punched in a life, maybe once. No, never.
Really?
Never got my... Why? You want to punch me?
No, not at all.
All right, thank you. No, I am not... I'm fairly diplomatic, and also I had a very weird way of charming large thugs, you know, into thinking that I was somehow flattering them when I was really taking the piss out of them. Do you know what I'm saying?
I hear you. But being from Levittown, that just fascinates me.
Yeah, I don't know how I managed it. I've messed with some heads, but I haven't taken any punches. Now, I guess what we were trying to talk about, what we were trying to ease into, it might be a better topic for tomorrow to talk about Obama, to talk about race. I think there's a chance that we might be getting Hill Harper on the show tomorrow. That's the actor who's on CSI New York, who went to Harvard with Obama and is very active in the Obama campaign. I'm trying to make some connections so we can get him to give us a call and talk a little bit about Obama. I'm an unabashed Obama supporter. I'm not an Obama fanatic, but I am a supporter in the sense that, look, I've seen him a couple times. He's stepped up his game a bit. He's saying some good stuff, but I think as a symbol, he's a good thing for this country. Let's take a couple more calls. Now, I'm squinting because I'm playing with my desktop. I'm getting old. Let's take this guy finally, just to set up for tomorrow anyways. He's been on the hold for an hour or so. Chris, listen on the internet in Rhode Island. How are you? Still there?
Yeah, I am.
Are you enjoying the show, bro?
Well, yeah. I'm getting a little antsy, but I just get to the
Sorry,
show.
Man. Sorry.
That's the radio. I understand. Just to preface this, I want to like Obama. I really do. I read his speech, the one that he gave when he was defending himself against those ridiculous attacks on his minister. I really want to like the guy. I mean, I was really moved. I ran around to all my conservative friends and said, you got to hear this speech. However, what gives me pause about Obama is the fact that he's gotten this far, which means he has the tacit approval of the major media, which are weapons manufacturers. One of the things that I don't understand is if he is the real deal, and I want to believe he is, Why didn't he stand up for Gravel and Kucinich when they clearly got torpedoed for saying things the networks didn't want to hear? That bothers me. He also is not, I'm pretty anti-military, and that's why I was Kucinich supporter. I don't like the fact that he just today he said that, you know, the surge has been working, however. Well, no, it hasn't been working.
I think that's a good point. This is a point that progressives have with him in general. I appreciate your call, Chris, and thanks for waiting. I think that is a good point, because what you're dealing with here is a politician. And there's no way around that. And it's a politician in the climate we're in who's going to try to get as many votes as possible in his own way. But I think those are decent progressive questions that Chris just posed. I'll try to address some of them. I think they were reasonable. If anyone else wants to address them, 800-989-1480. Got another half hour here. I'm enjoying being here. I feel like I'm back in it. Took about a half hour.
Yeah. Welcome back tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll come back tomorrow and the next day. And we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. So hang out and call me if you want. All right, it's about 34 past the hour, 35 past the hour. Or if you're in Australia, I think it's early next year. I'll be there next week. I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy, hanging out with my friend Don from Levittown.
Hey, America. Hey, Maron.
What's up, buddy? Doing the big work here. I have a hard time managing IMs. You know, I open up the IM thing for people who know me, who have my IM number, because I gave it out on the Maron and Cedar hours. I think we call it Maron versus Cedar, Tuesday mornings, not today because Sam is busy. But we do a live video cast, 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern. Let's try and get at some of these IMs. What do you think the chances are when Obama is president, the news media drops the ban on showing body bags and flag-draped coffins? People start getting mad at Democrats for not stopping the war, but Democrats start selling the war as a humanitarian effort, pushing Republicans to be the ones clamoring to stop the war since they have no tolerance for humanitarian efforts. This is kind of what I'm expecting to happen in some form or another. Wow. I spun around in a vortex of that paragraph. I think I understand what you're saying. I'm going to say, okay, it sounds like you've done the work. It sounds like you've done the homework. I would like to know what Obama does if he is president. I think that the call I just had is an interesting call. Basically, his call was saying that if he is garnering this much support and such a media darling, and the media is owned by corporations that are also involved in arms manufacturing, the question really becomes is he sanctioned by what an earlier caller called the Olympians? Has he been passed? Has he been given the sword? Is he approved by the they? That's the big question. And is he going to be turned out by the they? Is he really just diplomatic and using his vision of hope and his incredible ability to provide hope in people's hearts, some people's. Is he just another politician? That is going to be the question. That is the gamble we take. Is he the lesser of three evils at this point? I don't know. I have a hard time connecting with politicians, always. I never connected with Bill Clinton, even when people said he was so charming and wonderful. I never connected with Ronald Reagan, obviously. I understand their tricks. And with Obama, I'm not completely connected, but I believe that as a symbol, he would be very good for the United States. Whether he's going to legislate things, whether he's going to be on the dole, whether he's going to be turned out by these corporate entities that he says he's going to try to push out of government, I don't know. I don't know what he's really made out of. I do know what Hillary's made out of.
Hillary's a diplomatic person, somebody who has and will be turned out by corporate interests and can be. They all seem to be that. I think the idea that Barack Obama is green is something that is encouraging. I think that America really wants something new. I don't know what he'll do. We don't know. This is the gamble we take. Are you not going to vote? What, are you going to write in Ron Paul? I mean, I've got my own problems with that stuff. Now, I believe, wait, let's take this call. There's a couple of people waiting. Let's see. All right, Nicole, listening on the mic in Madison. How are you? You're on with Mark Maron.
Hi there, Mark.
How are you?
I love you so much. I'm just so sorry I have to fawn over you for just a couple seconds.
Would you?
I'd love to.
Thank you.
No, really, I saw your streaming thing on your webpage where you were in the mailroom somewhere and you got kicked out of Starbucks, and I was just with you for that wonderful hour or whatever it was.
I got to do more of those. I got to do more of those.
Come to Madison and do some. I'll film you.
Yeah? You got a camera?
Oh, I've got a great camera. I got green screens, so I can put you in Paris or wherever you like.
What do you mean you got green screens at your house?
I've got green screens because I went to Walmart one night and I found them $21, a whole set with green screens and everything.
I won't criticize you for shopping at Walmart because the green screen idea. You mean they sell them as green screens there, or you just got some green fabric? Or I don't understand. So now you can do this stuff at your house? You can put me anywhere I want to be?
Yeah, like Spy Kids or something, you know?
Okay, all right. Yeah. So what's on your mind about the whatever we're talking about? Anything, or you just want to hang out?
No, I have some thoughts about Obama. I think I have this fantasy activism idea, and I don't know if it would work, but I think it's a fun idea to toss around. And you know how Cindy Sheehan really inspired a lot of people and got people going, and there was a spirit there. And I was thinking, how do we get that spirit here? Because there's really, Obama's very inspiring and very cool. But what if we start pushing him on certain platform ideas? Like, he came out recently and said that the gays were cool, and he included LGBT, but he didn't really talk about T in the end, you know, transsexuals and all that.
Well, I mean,
I'm not asking him to do that right now. I'm just saying, let's take our responsibility as activists, whatever we're working on, and just say, let's put gentle pressure, you know, and say, hey, look at these pieces of agenda that should be on a platform somewhere.
Well, but let me ask you a question, honestly, because, I mean, you sound like you're a smart woman and, you know, your heart's in the right place. I mean, how much of that can we get in? Because it seems to be the issue with progressives in general is that nobody feels completely served in terms of their interests, especially if you're going to call them to the mat to really address all these progressive agendas. I think that it would become distracting and it would be easily be used against them. I think that we all have to gamble with this stuff that you know, maybe his heart's in the right place. We're not going to get a completely progressive candidate in. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but I think you're right. But do you think this is the time to do that?
I think you got a point there, and I think maybe now is not the time. But we should plot it for later. I mean,
okay.
We don't, just because we're on the left doesn't mean we have to be behind the eight ball here, right?
That's absolutely right.
We could plan it for after the primaries are over and the convention's over, right? And
then okay.
Could, yeah.
All right. I'm going to put it on my calendar. Start plotting.
Very good. And I have a little helper for you. If you don't know it yet, and anyone else out there listening with this new album by Joe Jackson.
Yeah.
Have you heard it?
No, I like Joe Jackson, though.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So Night and Day, right? That's the crowning glory right there.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. And he's back with that plus. I mean, he just came out of nowhere and just made this incredible album called Rain. And it's worth going down to the store, old-fashioned, and picking it up because it's got a DVD in it with some really nice interviews with him. He's a champ.
Yeah, no, I love him. I mean, there's not a Joe Jackson album I don't like, really, if I were to think about it. And he's one of those guys that I go back to and listen at different points in his career. I'll even listen to Jump and Jive all the way through. I don't care.
That'll work, too. But he's got a track 3 on that album, A Citizen Sane. And it's just about what do you do to be a sane person and to be an upstanding, sane citizen. If you've got that idea in your mind, how do you do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to go buy the record tomorrow. And I still call them records. Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Love
you. Love you, too. You know, Joe Jackson is great, and now I'm all... It's so weird. I get punchy in the third hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if it doesn't seem like that long or I haven't been on for a long time, I don't even know what the hell we were talking about. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, yeah, I like Joe Jackson a lot. And that's what I'm thinking about. I don't know. I don't know how that happens. I just get punchy. Let's take another call. How are you, Charles? Listening to KPOJ, Portland, Oregon, my future home. Charles.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm on the air.
Yeah, you're on the air. How's Portland? Seriously, as a place to live, is it someplace I should be considering?
Well, yeah, it's a very pleasant place, and people get along pretty good here.
Yeah, because like I'm done with it. I've had it with show business. I'm ready to open a bakery in Portland.
A lot of retired jazz people are retired here. But I want to talk about this. This is really important.
Okay, buddy.
You know, everybody wants to come out of Iraq. But you see, you can't come. I just walk out because you went in on a lie. You see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how is America going to apologize to Iraqi people for killing almost a million of them? Killing almost, wasting so much of our treasury. We need a person who is elegant enough, be able to speak enough, and with the courage to go to them people and apologize to them. See, this is where America's going to stumble. Because America has never apologized for any of its wrongdoing.
That's true.
Never has.
That's true.
They just gone. Now, you think George Bush was a war criminal as he is? You kill almost a million Iraqi people on a lie, and the whole world knows it's a lie.
Yeah.
He's supposed to just go off and live happily ever after and spend and collect the money to his cronies to put aside for him.
Well, I think I hear where you're going with this, Charles, and I think that, like, if I'm not misreading what you're saying, that Obama is the kind of guy that
Obama
might
be... Obama is that man.
Obama is
the man to do it.
That's a beautiful thing you're saying. Now, are you a retired jazz musician, sir?
No, I'm retired from Portland Community College, but I play jazz, too. I'm a guitar player.
Well, right on, Charles. I appreciate you calling. We don't got much time in this segment.
We got to apologize. We got to.
You're right.
Bush in jail.
Okay. I'm going to do that. I think he's right, and I think it's a touching sentiment because America doesn't take responsibility for that, for anything. Especially things they've done wrong historically. And I think that's one of the issues that I have with the pullout, with the idea of a massive pullout. That no matter what happens over there, it's going to be a mess. Someone's going to have to answer for the death, for the maiming on both sides. It's heartbreaking. Well, look, we got one more segment. 800-989-1480. I like that guy. I want to go to Portland, hang out with him. Hang out with us. Be back in a sec. Coming up on the end of it, heading towards the top of the hour. I don't know where you live, so I'm not going to disclose the time. But I will say we're heading towards the top of the hour. That I will say, Don, from Levittown.
But we have plenty of night ahead of us.
What you say that like what? What's going
like on? I'm saying that the rage continues after this is over.
Really? Has it been rage? I feel like I've been nothing but an open heart.
I don't mean that kind of rage. Just the rage, the energy, the
right.
The marin continues.
You mean we're gonna go eat and complain about something?
Yeah, that's probably women.
So I'm not man, you're gonna open up a can of worms
for tomorrow. For tomorrow, there's only one segment left.
I know, dude. No, I am not. I'm not complaining about women. I'm trying to manage with what's going on in my life. I do have, I'm dating somebody who's out of the country. I can't mention where. It's private. Mm. She's listening right now on the, and don't, no names, bro. She's listening right now.
You broed me.
I'm going to bro you, dude. I'm going to bro you. But she's listening as we speak.
Really?
Yeah. And that's very exciting technology. A lot of people are, I was going to say what she wrote, but I'm not going to say it. A lot of people are saying things about Portland. They're telling me yay. They're saying no, yes. Don't move to Portland. You'll get depressed. It's not what it seems, especially in light of your general beef with passive aggressiveness of progressives. Okay, I'll take that. Then someone said Portland is great and also asked me how my hummingbirds are. A lot of people don't know me out there who listen to Malloy. And I guess they're getting to know me. I haven't discussed cats, I think, which is probably better for everybody that I don't get into that, though they're all fine. But someone knows about my hummingbirds. The hummingbirds are well. When Don from Levittown stays at my house, he neglects to fill up the feeder. Didn't want to bring it up in front of people, but I know maybe it's just too tall an order for you to put a half a cup of sugar and 2 cups of water in the measuring cup and mix it up and then fill the feeders up. But that's okay, because I come home and I'm like, all right, Don doesn't care as much about the little birdies as I do. And that's all right.
There's always a possibility that Don from Levittown hates the little birdies.
Okay, all right. Well, if you want to talk about yourself in the third person in front of everybody, that's really up to you, bro. Did I bro you again? All right, let's do this. Elaine, listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. How are you? You're on the air.
Hello. Okay, hi. This is Elaine. First of all, I love Bob Dylan since 1965. Mm. I'm an African-American from Iowa.
He's a Jew from Minnesota.
Okay. But I'm probably not the only one that loves him. But anyway, I mean, like myself. Okay, the other thing I wanted to say is Hill Harper's from Iowa, but he left when he was around 9. He comes from a great family of civil rights activists and doctors, so I hope you get him on the air.
I hope I do, too. I'm in conversations with people that know him right now.
Really?
Yes,
I know him.
Yes, ma'am.
I can call his auntie right now.
I think he's in. I know a guy who works for the Obama campaign, and we talked yesterday, and he's apparently not shooting tomorrow. He was going to come on tonight, but he ran late shooting, so we're going to try
and
work
it out. Is he here in L.A. shooting?
I believe he is, yes.
Okay, he's down the street from me.
Maybe you should go harass him.
Yeah, I thought about it. I thought about running down there. We'll see. Anyway, I really called to tell you that Harry Belafonte was in an interview with Walter Mosley, mm-hmm. about a year and a half ago, and he said, if anybody can bring this world together, not the country, but the world, he said it will be a man of color or an indigenous person from the United States. And I think it was ironic that man called from Portland and said that. Well, I mean, he said he thought Obama was the man. If the powers that be will leave Senator Obama alone, and I believe there are a lot of spooks out there running the show, if they will leave him alone, I think he can do it. I truly do.
Yeah, I believe that too, and I appreciate your call. And go down and tell Hill to come on the show tomorrow.
All right, I'll run down there. See if you
okay.
Can.
All right, Elaine.
All right, bye.
Bye. You know, I was on the fence about it, but a lot of people talk to me in a way that I didn't really expect. Like one guy tells me, it's like just the idea of a guy with the name Barack Hussein Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Being president of the United States of America, would Muslims around the world would be like, oh, maybe, okay. Not like maybe we got one of our own in there, but maybe they are okay.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't really understand how much we are disliked
mm-hmm.
right now. I mean, I spent a month in Scotland. Even in Scotland, they wouldn't accept me. And I tried, and they didn't like me, and I became very patriotic. Not in a bad way, but just sort of like, you're wrong to judge. You know, and I swear to God, if I heard that one more time in an English accent, you know, Americans don't understand irony. I was like, really? We don't? I'm an intelligent person living in the United States. My entire existence is ironic. Okay. Oh, so here we go. Just take vitamin D, double up on the D for Portland. Does that hat fit you? It's cashmere. Wear it in good health. Oh, is that you? Yes, the hat fits me. Thank you for coming to see me in Seattle. That was very nice of you. And I always like seeing you. And thank you for the hat. Let's take a couple calls. Are you serious about Portland? I don't know if I want to take that one. I don't know if I'm serious about Portland, but as I said before, I feel like I'm more than halfway done with this game. And I'm talking about life. And I'm just starting to figure out what makes me happy. And I find that kind of stuff might be more important than striving. I don't know whether or not I'm hanging on to a dream or being dragged by it. But I don't want to get into my personal stuff. Yeah, right. What, are you kidding me? I don't want to get into my personal stuff. Well,
what, really?
We'll have to save it for tomorrow, Don. Let's go. I got a half a chicken at home.
All right.
We're going to go eat it. Is that okay if I eat a chicken I roasted earlier? You guys have been great. It's been great talking to you again. It's been great being on the air. I'm looking forward to the next couple of days now that I figured out how to get back in the groove. I always feel like I have to cover everything right out of the gate. And then I always tried to do too much. But I feel like I've relaxed now, eased into it. And thank you all for listening. Thank you for all my old fans who made me feel loved. Judging this, okay. I'm reading IMs. The IM thing is just too much for me to handle. Look, Malloy's on vacation. I'll be in for the next couple of days for him. Have a good evening. I hope I made some of you feel better. I hope we discussed what you wanted to talk about. You'll learn more about me tomorrow if you don't know me. And please, sleep well and try to have a little peace in your heart. Don, I'll talk to you tomorrow as well. Thanks for listening.